The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. Happy 2023. Not so for a number of managers, as we find out when we round up on the managerial merry-go-round with John Couch from the Non-League Paper later. But first, a celebration of the magical weekend that is the FA Cup third round. Three non-league competitors we hope will do us proud. In this bumper episode, we start off with the only man who can provide the stats and facts we need on the greatest cup competition in the world. Yes, at FA Cup Fact File himself, Mr. Philonets, celebrating the FA Cup. We lend him to the wider football world who suddenly appreciate the competition is underway. This week, we also get a player's perspective. Not one, but two. First up, Wrexham, the club in the spotlight across the globe, but we are privileged to get an interview with a player with a great story, a great ethos, and a greater tendency to steer clear of all that spotlight than most. We're privileged to have Ben Tozer himself admitting that he's a prime example of the type of player assembled by Phil Parkinson to take Wrexham to the next level. But first, history in the FA Cup is the aim. History in the FA Cup might well be the title of our next guest's autobiography when he finally gets round to writing it in a few or years' time. Jamal Fifield has won the FA Trophy, he's won promotion to the Football League, and he's got more FA Cup cup sets to his name than most. But he's gunning for more and a chance to pass on his learnings and knowledge to others around him in the game at Boreham Wood. John Couch rounds it all up as the non-league paper returns to a Sunday and 2023 can properly get underway. So sit back, relax, and let's get on with matters in hand. So new year, new you, new FA Cup competition, or so the mainstream media will have you believe. Here at the Non-League Football Show, of course, we know about the hours of football, the hundreds of burgers, the countless blades of grass chopped just to get to this stage. We also know the huge sacrifices given over to our level of the game by my next guest. The 64 clubs left in at this stage is something of a doddle when you consider the qualifying rounds he's already prepared the stats on. However, with three non-league clubs still in the competition, his input to this round is not lost on us, so it is a pleasure and an honour to welcome back to the Non-League Football Show at FA Cup Fact File, Mr. Philonets. Welcome back, Phil.
Hi, Tim. Yes, it's great to be back. Happy New Year to you. It's nice to still be talking about non-league clubs in the FA Cup at this stage of the competition.
It is, and I know the only full well that the non-league community can be unforgiving if you get facts right. I'm not sure if fans of the game higher up the pyramid are any better. Have you experienced anything already with your fact file going out this week?
Throughout the whole season, I know that being popular is more important than being liked. So I don't mind getting challenged, but it can be frustrating sometimes. But no, on the whole, people are kind to my mistakes.
Wait, and a mistake is very rare. You are the man that puts everything together, come up with things that some of us would never have thought about as well. We have got you and I always talk about, we love tradition, we love old school, because that's where the magic really of the FA Cup commences, isn't it? But we've got 32 ties this weekend, across the whole of the weekend. Just 10 of them are kicking off on Saturday at 3 p.m.
That's right, yeah. That used to be one of the biggest days in the football calendar was the third round Saturday, where all 32 ties would kick off at 3, and the excitement that came with that. But you're right, it's spread out now across 4 days in total, and you're right, with only 10 of the ties kicking off at 3 p.m. on Saturday. And two of those actually do involve the non-league side.
Yeah, two of those are the non-league clubs without any TV coverage. A weekend of football, of course, if you want it. But it is one of those things. I remember I've been involved with a club that have been involved in the third round. And just we did play our game on a Sunday rather than a Saturday at 3 o'clock. But the magic of the FA Cup was almost standing on the terraces looking to see how those other non-league clubs were doing on a Saturday afternoon on FA Cup third round day. And it's just a strange one with me. But let's get to those three non-leaguers. Let's begin with a club who are making this a bit of a habit, really. Boreham Wood, their third successive season at this stage of the competition. But that's not, apparently, a unique achievement for them.
No, it's a very good achievement. It's fantastic for a non-league club to get this far into the competition for one season, never mind three on a trot. They are the fourth such club to achieve the feat since the current structure was put in place whereby the top flight in the second division get exempted to the third round. So I think Altrincham and Corinthians and Dagenham and Redbridge are teams that have achieved the feat in the past, but it's fantastic. They've got a great opportunity at home to Accrington Stanley. There's no reason to think they couldn't.
I missed my cue there. Should I have shouted, who are they? But I'm not sure how many people.
Yeah. Whoever they are, have a glass of milk. so they've got a good chance, haven't they, to win. I'll be actually at that game to see whether or not they can achieve it. And they would become only the second non-league club to make the fourth round in three consecutive seasons if they were able to do it, with Telford United, the only club in the history of the competition to manage that in the past.
Interesting you say that, because home advantage not played a big hand in Wood's recent FA Cup successes. They seem to have been just as dangerous when they've been travelling to cause a cup set. But what are their chances against Accrington Stanley? It's not the big gap that we see with maybe some of the other clubs when we talk about cup sets in the FA Cup.
No, I would say that a two-level gap would be easily surmountable for any club, I think, to try and progress with home advantage. And, they're a strong team in the National League, and Accrington Stanley, they're, I think, mid-table in EFL 1. So, if all goes right on the day, there's no reason to think that they couldn't pull off another upset and see themselves in the next round.
Yeah, and also at home, at Chesterfield, who are going well in the National League. They're keeping the pressure up on the Wrexham and Notts County. But they have three divisions between them and West Brom, who are their visitors. Apparently, despite that, that they've got great pedigrees, both the clubs, I believe they haven't met before in this competition.
That's right, yeah, even though they've been involved in it since the 19th century, both of them know it's their first meeting. Chesterfield were here last year, weren't they, when they took on Chelsea and gave a good account of themselves there. So they'll be keen to try to make it through to the fourth round for the first time in quite a while. I think it's about 8 years since they managed to get that far, and probably as a league team at that point. They'll be encouraged, I think, by the fact that the Baggies have exited in the third round in both the last two seasons. But I think it'll be a difficult task for Chesterfield. Will they be even interested in trying to win, given they want to concentrate on getting themselves out of the National League? But, West Brom famously were on the wrong end of a defeat against Woking in the past, one of the most famous FA Cup upsets. Will they get stung again?
It's interesting that point that you note about the Chesterfield. Would they want to focus more on their league? When we were speaking to the Boreham Wood boss, Luke Garrard, a few weeks back, it was something that he said that he's definitely learnt from in recent seasons, where their league form's been affected by their FA Cup form. And I'd imagine, it's a physical impact on you as a player, playing against players from a higher level who are obviously maybe better, slightly better athletes with better resources available to them. But mentally as well, as a fan, it's difficult enough when your club's competing in the FA Cup third round. As a player, I can't imagine what that must take out of you.
Well, if you can't get up for a game where you're playing against opposition from three or four levels above you, then you're never going to get up for a game, are you? So I think the adrenaline kicks in, the excitement kicks in, and people, you know, even with minor knocks, pretend they haven't got them, and those with major knocks tend to think that they're not so bad, and they all want to play and be involved in that game. And the fans want to see it as well, that the home tie against the bigger league side is something that is to be cherished, and hopefully they'll get some memories there that will enable them to see it again next round.
That big game effect on injuries, as Dave Anderson always likes to recall, always the games when everybody's available and no one's got that dental appointment or necessary trip to visit their granny or similar organise. The third non-league slide, of course, well used to the spotlight in recent months and years. Wrexham, they do have TV coverage on the S4C, the Welsh Channel 4. But that's also a Saturday evening kickoff and an away tie. And this one is where the teams have met before.
Yeah, they've form part of a duo of ties in this round of clubs meeting for the first time since over 100 years ago. So that is quite a long wait to have to wait. So Coventry and Wrexham met back in 1909-10 season, and bizarrely that game was actually in a qualifying round in those days. So Coventry beat Wrexham that day 3-0, so that's quite a long time to have to wait to try and avenge a past defeat, but they are not the team who had to wait the longest in this third round. And in fact, at Derby County versus Barnsley is setting a new competition record of the biggest gap between consecutive FA Cup meetings, and it will be 126 years since the two sides last met in the competition. So Queen Victoria was still on her throne back in 1896, and I think they've had about 30-odd prime ministers since. And I think Barnsley back in the day was still called Barnsley St. Peter, which shows you how long ago it was. And 126 years, it's a long time to wait to avenge a defeat, and especially when that defeat was by a high score of 8-1. So will Barnsley be keen to try and put that long right 126 years later?
Well, I don't expect there'll be anyone around that would have been at both of those ties, but were there team sheets back then? I mean, you could get those two team sheets, you know, alongside each other in a nice frame. What a great piece of FA Cup memorabilia that would be.
It would indeed. I'm not sure what might exist from the 19th century in terms of team sheets, but yeah, it would be good to compare and contrast the size I don't know whether the teams even know that's how long it is, but they won't know it's a competition record anyway, which in itself is a fantastic thing.
It is. And Wrexham on the resurgence, of course, under their new ownership, but we were talking about time past. They'll have a bumper away following Coventry. Coventry obviously experiencing their own problems at the moment as well in terms of ground and the future and that sort of thing. But I'd imagine there'd be quite a few following Wrexham that would never have seen them win in the third round before.
Yes, there would definitely be a few, particularly some of those that have joined in recently. So it's quite a while. I don't think they've managed to achieve it in this century yet. So it would be, I think, 2000 maybe was the last time that they made it into the fourth round.
That's a whole generation, isn't it, in the old-fashioned generation type stuff.
So, I would say so.
Yeah,
but it is great time for the club now, obviously, with the backing that they've got. And, you know, they'll go there with confidence to think they can turn over Coventry.
Yeah, but certainly. Well, you know, I look at all three of those ties and there's a possibility of cups at each and every one of them, isn't there? The winners, we talk about FA Cup and as maybe a money spinning thing. We're talking about Wrexham, who've got their own owners and having money coming in. Winners netted, £67,000 for the last round. Winners this time around, £105,000, I think, on offer for the winners. It is big money, but it's not really big money, given that the whole world have got their eyes on the competition from here on in, if they weren't already with Wrexham's involvement.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's big money for smaller clubs, isn't it? For the top flight clubs, it's pocket money for them to get through, isn't it? But, I mean, it's interesting that we've got three non-league sides still standing, and each of them do have, you know, on paper, they have a chance to get through. But I don't know if you recall the last time we had three non-league clubs make it through to the fourth round. It was way back in the mid-70s. Were you around in those days?
I was proper grassroots level, I think. both in terms of what I was watching at, I think, Middlesex County League standard, but also probably that height as well. But yeah, that's a great stat. Now, you've already mentioned the Derby Barnsley stat as well, and we've covered non-league. There are, of course, the 29 other ties not involving non-leaguers. So are there any other stats that facts that stand out for you that we all should know, that we all should be able to, you know, impress our friends when we're in the pub with them at the weekend?
Well, we've got a couple, I suppose. You've got Aston Villa, who have a home tie with Stevenage, and they'll be looking to break a current wretched run of six successive third-round exits. So that's the longest losing streak, if you like, at the moment, of those teams entering the competition at this stage. So keep an eye out for that one. Leeds United travelling to Cardiff City, always interesting in the FA Cup. Way back in 2002, Leeds went there, not allowed to celebrate, apparently, when they scored, and ended up on the wrong end of a 2-1 defeat, and which was the start of their decline, I think, at that game. But an interesting stat there is that Cardiff and Leeds were torn together consecutively in three seasons in the 50s, all at Elm Road, and Cardiff won every single one of those 2-1. So that was quite an interesting streak. And I think the final one to leave people with is Liverpool are cup holders. It's the eighth time that they've entered the FA Cup as cup holders. On the previous seven times that they've done so, they've actually been knocked out four times in the third round. So they haven't got a great record of defending their title, and they're up against Wolves, who've got a better head-to-head record in the competition against them. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get through the third round, even with home advantage.
That's probably not part of Klopp's team talk, I'd expect, this weekend, but a brilliant stat as ever, Phil. Tell people where they can find out all your facts and stats and read your whole FA Cup third round preview.
Yeah, the best bet is to follow me on Twitter at FA Cup Fat File, and from there you can get to my website, facupfatfile.co.uk, or even to my blog, which covers off the whole of the FA Cup and third round, all ties covered with facts and stats, on wordpress.facupfatfile.
A pleasure, as always, at FA Cup Fat File, Mr. Phil Annett. Thank you once again, and enjoy your weekend.
Cheers, Tim. Speak to you again soon.
It is the FA Cup spotlight for three clubs this weekend, but with an away day, an evening kickoff, some might say the spotlight is probably a little dimmer this week for one of those clubs. Since the first rumours of Hollywood investment there, they've had many big beams shone on Wrexham. The documentary, the recent visit of the new king, the battle at the top of the National League, all that, however, means very little this weekend when an away day at a club with its own struggles off the field sees the North Wales side in the FA Cup third round and looking to make the fourth round for the first time this century. To tell us more about it all, Phil's, let's speak to a Wrexham player and let's give a warm welcome to the Non-League Football Show to Ben Tozer. Welcome, Ben.
How are we doing, Tim? You're right.
I'm good. Did you know that Wrexham haven't been in the fourth round proper this century, this side of the millennium?
No, I didn't. I didn't realise. When you put it like that, that's pretty astonishing, really, considering the size of the club. And I know they've, for the last 16, 17 years, been out of the Football League. But still, that's a massive thing for us to aim towards.
So no pressure or anything like that. But every day must seem like a big day nowadays for Wrexham. You've got sell-out crowds. You're probably the Globe's favourite second team. This is the FA Cup third round, though. Is there an extra level of excitement about the place this week?
Honestly, the club's brilliant. It's every day. It's crazy, you know. One of our lads, Andy Cannon, just signed for us, and I said, "Don't ever be surprised at what goes on at this club." You know, the day he signs, the king arrives. You know, it's absolutely bonkers the amount of, you know, publicity the club has, and you know, even just from there being massive queues outside the club shop, and you hear about merchandise this, and it's all off to America. And but it's such an exciting time to be a part of the club. But you know, looking towards Saturday, I think it's a no pressure game. Really, it's one where we can kind of take the shackles off, enjoy the game, obviously try and win it, but you know, just see where that kind of takes us. We're taking a massive following to the game, so you know, let's just go and enjoy it and see where that takes us.
Yeah, and away trip against a side mid-table in the Championship. Any other year, probably that'd just be a nice day out and one for the scrapbook for you guys. But the season you're having on and off the field, there's many, including myself, backing a potential cup set here.
Yeah, listen, we fancy ourselves. We're in good form. We're a very good team. We're well organised. We've got all the tools in place to go and cause that upset. So it's basically just down to the day. And like I say, enjoy the fact that there's no pressure on us. We're away from home against the Championship side. We've taken a massive following, like I said, and it's one to enjoy. But at the same time, we're going to get through it to the fourth round and see if we can get, you know, an even bigger club, home or away.
Yeah. And it has been a few years in the making, all this excitement building around the club. And we've all seen it building as well. Yet you came into it partway through the start of last season, you joined the club. But was that spotlight something of a double-edged sword for someone thinking of signing, as you mentioned there with recent signings?
What do you mean? Sorry.
Well, is it did you maybe think twice because of the spotlight that it's in? Yeah, but that's also a great spotlight for your career.
Yeah, I think it's. Listen, I'm not the sort of person that really likes the spotlight. You know, a lot of people commented to myself and my family and friends, like, why is Ben not in the documentary as much? And you know, I've kind of and even Rob, one of the owners, has mentioned it to me a few times that I know you don't like the camera being around you and stuff like that, but it's really, I find it, it's not a distraction because I'm so used to it now. When I first came, it was a bit alien, but it's almost, we're all used to it now. We're all used to the cameras being there. We like all the production team and you know, they're just great people to have around. And the thing I find hard is I like to enjoy messing around, I guess, and being a bit of a child around the place, and it's just part of my weird personality. But you know, it's also, I don't really like to be like that in front of the camera because it almost looks like you're playing up to it. So I'm kind of subdued in the opposite way, probably almost a bit boring for the camera, if that makes sense.
You'd make a great producer. I mean, I might be calling you up in a few years' time to come and produce some other bits and pieces. I've had the pleasure of meeting your gaffer, Phil Parkinson, a number of times, and the one thing that always strikes me is that nothing really ruffles him. So when you're part of a squad in so many spotlights, that it must be a great reassurance and help keep that dressing room family at ease and concentrate on the important stuff because you're there to play football.
Yeah, the gaffer's, you know, straight down the line, you know what he wants from you. He knows what he wants to do and how he wants to set you up. There's no real grey areas about it in terms of how do I put it? I suppose it's kind of almost no stone left unturned. You know, when it comes down to set pieces and things like that. So you know it's pretty much all there for you. And, you know, with the staff that he's got around him, the work that they all put in as well, it's a pretty good formula for success, really. And you can tell by the way he's had three promotions and, you know, we have a laugh and joke about it sometimes. And, you know, it's good to be a part of.
Yeah, yeah. You got to play at Wembley in the FA Trophy final in May for Wrexham. The result, obviously not what you wanted, but what I love on this show is inspirational stories. And I just think from the 16-year-old that was heartbroken for being released from his hometown club at Plymouth Argyle to achieve that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an inspiration for all of us.
Yeah, it's an absolute dream. You know, and I've never forgotten that. I've never forgotten the fact that I was released. I genuinely dreamt and only ever wanted to be a footballer. I think a lot of footballers kind of take a lot of things for granted in the way that, you know, you see footballers doing footballer things. Again, I'm not that sort of person. And for me to kind of stick to my roots and, like, almost appreciate everything that kind of has come my way, because, you know, I'm going to be thrown into the real world pretty soon with a career coming to an end, I guess. So, you know, it's good to kind of hold that down. But playing at Wembley is a dream come true. I'm very lucky. I've played there three times. So it's every boy's dream to play at Wembley.
Yeah. And after Plymouth, you went to Swindon, and then you had that big move to Newcastle, which, as a young lad, is a long way from home, wherever you are. But from the southwest, it's a long way. So now you are one of the older heads. Do you use those experiences, the good and the bad, to help some of the younger lads in the dressing room who also might be hundreds of miles from home?
Yeah, 100%. I always try and kind of relate to people. It's tough. I don't want to be like a know-it-all, because you don't know it all, but you want to relate to them. I've been in a lot of situations that those players find themselves in, like you said, moved away 410 miles away from home, living on my own in a flat. Never got taught how to cook. I didn't know how to set up house bills. I even couldn't even take out a Sky contract, so I was still only 17. So, you know, things like it's a bit strange. And then when it comes to getting a mortgage, they're talking about interest rates, and I didn't have the foggiest idea of how to do any of these things and all these things. And throw into that your 17-year-old lad who's got all of his best mates back at home. And, you know, it's not the be-all and end-all, but a 17-year-old lad seeing all his mates being out every weekend and they're all together, and you kind of feel like you're missing out. And you've got, you know, them things, they get used to, you get used to it over time, but it's all a part of it, you know. It's part of growing up as a person. You have to grow up very fast. But, like, going back to what you're saying, it's trying to relate to people that are in similar or situations they might find themselves in, what you've been in.
Yeah, and I guess you've always wanted to be a footballer. You love being a footballer, but I guess being a footballer, particularly for a club with a high profile like you are now, that can be quite a lonely place sometimes, I'd imagine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's tough. You know, like speaking now, I'm on my own, just sat up in a house up here, and my wife and my kids are back at home. I could move them up here and be with them, but it's more important for them to have their family around, our kids, and, you know, they start school pretty soon, and it's more about them than it is about me. So, you know, it can be tough. It can be a lonely place. Form can play a part of that into some people's heads and careers. So, you know, it's just about trying to find, in my eyes, a routine, a structure to go off, and you're almost a bit boring, I suppose, day-to-day life, not being able to do all the fun stuff. But, you know, it's part of the career and part of the makeup.
And it is, you know, some of those things that even at non-league level, however far down you go down the period, the sacrifices that the players, that the, you know, even the kit man has to make, just to make sure that there's a team out there week in, week out. You know, nobody plays badly on purpose, do they? You're all out there doing your best.
Yeah, of course. And we used to talk about it at a previous club I was at, about, you know, what you do in the shadows. It's such a huge thing, because I could be home here now. You know, I could have not gone for dinner, just grabbed a McDonald's and be eating and drinking rubbish and whatever, and it's all about discipline. And you say sacrifices, it is sacrifices, but I think a lot of people around you make the sacrifices, and it's up to you as a player to make the right choices. So it's almost, you know, looking after yourself, giving the best version of yourself, and not only for yourself, but for the team, which is more important, because you can all be doing the right things on and off the pitch. It'll only pay you back and on the pitch, you know.
Yeah, and looking at your CV, you appear to be the sort of person that confronts a problem, just rolls his sleeves up and takes them on. And that seems to be also looking at the makeup of many of your teammates as well. So, you know, that comes into, you know, Phil Parkinson and the other coaching staff putting people together. It's also the look of most of those clubs who have finally made that leap and got promotion out of the National League into the Football League. So do you sense that maybe you've got the right, you know, ingredients, I guess, to get up this season?
Yeah, I suppose the team reflects the manager and the way that he is. I think you put that pretty, I think you hit the nail on the head, really. It is the Gaffer's team, the Gaffer's players. We've got no bad eggs. We've got great lads in the team, and we do generally just crack on, whether you have a little hiccup during the week in training that the time's changed for whatever time you start in gym, etc. We all just kind of know there's no real moaning and groaning. It's kind of right, just get on with it. It is what it is. We are non-league. We are a fantastic club with all these things at our disposal. But at the same time, remember where you come from, where you are. Don't be a prima donna and just get on with it. But I think that kind of stands us in good stead for what we're trying to achieve. Like you said, being a team, having that understanding of each other, knowing where we all want to go. We're all kind of pointing in the same direction. We're all doing the same things, doing the right things. And hopefully at the end of the season, it doesn't mean that will 100% get the job done for us. But I think you do it more times right than wrong, then you're definitely in with a chance.
Yeah, it's like that old adage, isn't it? You create your own luck. You work hard, you'll get somewhere. So this 5:30 p.m. yeah. kickoff away, how does that change your normal match day routine?
It's just basically, they start 2.5 hours later. That's not getting up 2.5 hours later, because I'm on child clock, which is seven o'clock. So there's no chance of that. But it is like all your meals are just kind of pushed back. And I suppose you just maybe add another little breakfast in there beforehand. But match days are pretty boring anyway, leading up to the kind of crunch time. It's about sitting around, making sure you're not on your feet too much, and preserving your energy and eating the right things and getting the right fuel into your body. So it just kind of prolongs the day. And in fact, you might have a little nap in there. Instead of 3 o'clock kickoff, you wouldn't. 5:30 or 7:45, you might throw a little hour and a half nap in, just to kind of refresh and recharge your batteries, really.
See, this is the elements of the documentary they've been missing. We need to follow you on a day, 24 hours, 24 hours in Bentosa instead of 24 hours in A&E. That's what we need.
That'd be pretty boring. I mean, even though I kind of done my best to keep them away from my house, but yeah, it's leading up to a game. That wouldn't be that wouldn't be what you'd want to watch. I suppose you'd want to be there with me yesterday, running around the soft play with my kids, and all the other kids calling me daddy, because that's what my kids are calling me, so they think my name's daddy. Oh, brilliant!
Well, I'm sure as a footballer you've probably been called many many worse things as well
yeah,
by some
a lot worse
opposition lot worse. Fans. Look, Ben, I know we could talk forever, but I'll leave you to go and enjoy your evening, prepare for the weekend. Best of luck in the FA Cup this weekend, but also best of luck in the rest of the season. And hopefully we'll speak to you again on the Non-League Football Show.
Nice one. Thanks, Tim.
Now, I feel a player sort of vibe going on this week. Surely it's every young footballer's dream to play in the FA Cup. An even bigger dream to play in the third round of the FA Cup. For some, it'll never come. For others, it's almost run-of-the-mill. I would hazard a guess that no less exciting every time it comes around. Let's find out, and welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Boreham Wood defender Jamal Fifield. Welcome back, Jamal.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
It's always a pleasure to get you on.
Thank you.
So this FA Cup third round then, as a young kid, something you'd always dreamed of, always watched on the TV?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, with my dad, we used to watch the FA Cup every year it came round, and you hear about the non-league stories and magic of the FA Cup. And it's a special occasion, no matter how many times you do it. We've kind of made it a habit, if you will, at Boreham Wood now. And it seems as though we're a guarantee and a shoe-in every single time the FA Cup comes round that we're going to have a good run in. But we cherish every moment, and although it's our third in 3 years, the occasion isn't lost on us. And we know how important it is. We know how big it is for the club and for the town of Boreham Wood. And we're just relishing another opportunity to come and show how good we can be as a team, management staff and players, against another League One team.
Yeah, we spoke with your manager, Luke Garrard, ahead of the second round tie, a trip to Bristol Rovers. He wasn't cocky, but he was confident in your squad's ability in getting a result down there. And as it was, what was it, a convincing 2-0 away win? As a player in those sort of games, do you have time to reflect on what you're achieving as you're playing in that game?
Well, firstly, I think the gaffer's confidence comes from the preparation that he puts in every single week when it comes to looking at opposition and finding a game plan that maybe can go against them. So he does his due diligence, he does his homework on all these things. And that's where I think his confidence comes from. Then it comes, obviously, to he knows what he's got as a squad. He's put this squad together, and each year he seems to be plucking little gems out and finding players that can really compete at this level. So, yeah, it's one of those things where we do get a moment because we watch back our games and we watch how well we've played and organise ourselves as a unit. So we definitely get time to reflect and bask in the glory, if you will. But at the same time, the games in the National League come thick and fast, and there isn't much time to dwell on a good performances because, as you know, there's always a game around the corner.
There's games thick and fast everywhere at the moment. And yeah, 2021, yeah. Round one, you beat Southend on penalties. The second round, you beat Canvey Island before third round defeat against Millwall. Then last term, AFC Wimbledon dispatched in round three, AFC Bournemouth in round four, and it was only Premier League Everton that could stop you. So you're probably too young to remember the Milk advert that referred to Ian Rush and Accrington Stanley, but with them, your visitors this time around, you could, yeah, fairly be excused to say, who are they?
No, it's not a who are they moment just yet. it's one of those things where the FA Cup it can serve up so many different variations of a game, you know. So when we was playing Canvey Island, when we was playing St Albans, we didn't take them lightly because we knew exactly what a cup upset can look like. We've been giant killers, if you will. So we're always aware of being on our best and performing our best. So now we're coming up against a team that are not going to win the league, similar to us. Their fortunes have been a bit dire of late, but at the same time, we're going to go there full of confidence because we played a team that's at the other end of the table in Bristol Rovers, and we played really, really well. Don't get me wrong, we had our slices of luck. I think they hit the post and there's a couple of goal line clearances, but you need that in the FA Cup. And I feel as though that little sprinkle of magic is coming again, and hopefully we can get a little bit more on Saturday against Akron.
Yeah. And when we spoke with Luke last time out, he mentioned he'd learnt a lot on how the FA Cup run and eventual defeats had impacted on league form. What about as a player? Do you take your own learnings into this season from that too?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, it was such a high last year going into that game against Everton. And maybe our league, I know there's a few whispers that our league form did suffer due to the FA Cup run. And once it was over, we kind of faltered. But to be honest with you, there was a lot more injuries. And I think that came with because we had so many games. Mm. So I think the boys have learned from that. And sometimes you've got to maybe take care of your body in different ways. But at the same time, you're always learning. You're always learning. I'm 33 years old and I'm learning things every single day, and especially about my body, especially about G-ing up other players and getting them ready for a game. So, yeah, you never stop learning.
That's interesting because I remember you first coming to my attention as a raw young player released by Leighton Orient, making a big impact at Maiden Inn United. I'd known Drax Johnson Hippolyte for a while from his time with us at Yedding. And I knew that he had an eye for a player. And seriously, he was enthusing as much about you as he did about DJ Campbell when he first brought him to us. So, I mean, how important is it when you're a young player to have people like that put their faith in you?
Oh, it's invaluable. It's invaluable. And I credit Drax for a huge part of my career. Without him giving a chance to a young 18-year-old who's just been released from Leighton Orient, I wouldn't be the player I am or the man I am today. So I'm still in regular contact with Drax, and I always tell him how grateful I am for him to give me that chance. But yeah, as you said, there are some managers out there that don't like giving chances to youth simply because they're untried and untested. And at the end of the day, at non-league, your job's on the line. You know, you've got overheads that you need to look after, and you need to put trust in people that you know could have been there and done it. But yeah, it's massive. And when I was coming through at Maidenhead, it was just about myself learning on the job, if you will. And Drax put his arm around me and taught me a lot.
Yeah, and now you're one of the more experienced players. Do you find yourself copying some of those moves that managers, coaches, older players use with you to help support some of the younger players coming through?
Yeah, definitely. I think I've been around the game quite a lot now, and I take little man management skills from all different managers. I take the best bits that I enjoyed from the managers that I played under and try to apply it every day with the young lads. And even some of the older boys as well. There are some managers that have maybe done things that I haven't agreed with. So it's a learning curve, you know. So it's one of those things where you just take little bits and steal little bits of little gems here and there. And anything that can help a young player get further in their career, that's what I'm about, you know. I'm very big on mentoring. I'm very big on mental health. So I try to help the players as much as I can in and around when I'm playing or when I'm on the sidelines.
Yeah, and you've got some great experiences and knowledge to pass on. You had that great move up to York City into the National League from Maidenhead. And I think you scored your debut up there but then struggled to hold down a first team spot. And you came back down south, had a brief spell at Maidenhead on loan, but went back to fight, really, to get back into that first team up at York. What was the... Who or what was the motivator behind that to go back and sort of prove that you were good enough to play at that level?
I did. I scored on my debut against Tamworth, and the manager that brought me into York City got sacked a couple of days later. So I'd only actually signed, and then he got sacked maybe a week in. And then obviously a new manager comes in, and you've got to prove yourself all over again. Now, as all footballers know, you might be one manager's cup of tea, but you might not be another manager's cup of tea. So I had to go out and prove myself to the new manager because I wasn't getting a sniff. And I wasn't one of those players that I've ever been happy to sit and just pick up my money. I wanted to go out there and play as many games as I could. So I had to go out there and I had to find my confidence again. And when I came back out, I was a refreshed player. I was back in my groove of playing football. I was back in my groove of having that confidence. And it's just that determination to prove someone wrong, really. I think when my back's against the wall, I think it brings the best out of me. And I really want to show that the step up wasn't too much, because sometimes when a player goes up and comes back down, there's always the whispers of, yeah, he's not good enough. He's not at the level yet. And I didn't want that to be me. So I got my head down, studied my game, and came back a better player. And hats off to Gary Mills, or another manager. He's another manager that I hold in high regard, similar to Drax, similar to Luke Garrard, that have really had a profound effect on my football career. And he gave me a chance, and I managed to get promoted and win the FA Trophy in the same year with York City.
Yeah, I mean, for most, yeah, winning the FA Trophy, getting promoted back up to the Football League with the club, for most, that would be the great pinnacle of a career. But you've then had spells at Grimsby, Welling, Wrexham, Gateshead, then to Boreham Wood, and this impressive FA Cup record. Will you only get time to reflect on all your achievements in, what, say, another 10 years when the legs are finally given up?
Yeah, maybe. I've been very fortunate to have a really good career at the National League level, and obviously I've played League Two. I've been fortunate enough to play for some great clubs and some great managers. And I'm always great. I'm always reflecting. I'm always looking back at how far I've come. And I really appreciate my journey. But that journey's only been possible because of the hard work and dedication that I've been putting in over the years, you know. It's never an easy road being a footballer. There's always a day you've got to prove yourself. You can never rest on what you did the last game or the last training session. But yeah, maybe when I'm old and grey and I can look back at all my T-shirts and the trophies and the medals that I've got, that I can finally appreciate it.
Have you got one of those huge cardboard boxes somewhere in a garage or a sort of a storage system somewhere that you're going to sort through all those shirts one day and just sort of a...
I do. My storage system is my dad's house, really. So everything that I get, I just take it to my dad's. Like my manager of the year, manager player of the year trophy went to my dad. All my trophies are at my dad's, from player of the month to... all the shirts that we've got from Danny Hunter, who's excellent with the shirts. He frames them all and gives us them as a keepsake for as a thank you for him. So everything goes to my dad. And when I go around there, it's a bit like a trip down memory lane. All my cuttings from Wrexham, from Welling, from everything, from back from my years at as a schoolboy. So yeah, that's where all my stuff goes to.
Brilliant stuff. You mentioned Danny Hunter, a old friend of the show and a great character, and has had such an impact on non-league that's not really appreciated by everybody, I don't think. You've now been at Boreham Wood, what, since 2018. In that time, you've added some remarkable memories, already a great career. But you've also seen that club grow off the field too. Is it ready for the Football League Challenge?
Oh, it's definitely ready for the Football League. It's just about the players getting us there. Danny Hunter's working hard to change the structure of the football club. He's working hard to change the ground. He's adding stands in. He's adding fan zones. He's adding. He's making it state-of-the-art for all the fans to have a great experience wherever they come there. And it's time we... Obviously, we repaid him last year with a great cup run. And credit to him, you know, because he's at the training ground every day and no one works as hard as him. No one works as hard as the gaffer to make... And Charlie, to be fair, his son, to make the club what it is, you know. It's a really tight-knit, family-run club. And as a player, you just buy into that. And we just want to repay the chairman as much as we can.
Yeah, for someone who's got, you know, quite a hard persona, I think I've seen him cry more than any other chairman over the years, because there's been so many great memories that he's achieved from, well, the time when I first met him, I think, yeah, Bournemouth Yedding, and I think there are about 110 people within the ground.
Yeah, well, Bournemouth is the chairman's baby, you know. He grew up with the club, and like any parent, you protect your baby with all the ferocity that it needs to be if you feel as though someone is threatening that. But I've got nothing but great words to say about the chairman. He's been excellent with me since I've come to the club, and myself and him have got a really good relationship. As you said, there are some people, but I think everybody... you can't get along with everyone, and I think sometimes that he gets a bad rep, but a lot of the people I speak to have got nothing but great words to say about him.
I think anybody that's ever dealt with him, met with him on a proper personal level, they're not the people that got bad words to say about him. We come to Meadow Park on Saturday, FA Cup history to be made. Who's the first player in at the ground, and why is it always them?
As on a match day.
On a match day, yeah.
It varies, you know. I'd say the first player is usually Emile Family. He's someone that likes to get... Everyone's got different routines, but we drive in together. So it's usually a mix of Mark Ricketts, Femi, myself, maybe Josh Rees. Just players that have been there and done it who just want to get their head down and get into their routine and get ready for their game. I'd say those four, really. And the same, similar on a training day as well.
And on a similar note, who's the last one out of the dressing rooms on a match day and why?
I'd say the young boys. So maybe Brunty, young George Broadbent. And they've both done really well this year in the FA Cup. They both scored in, I think, two or more rounds. So they're usually the last ones. They like to chill, have a long conversation, have a long shower. Those two do take their time. If they score like they have been, I've got no riches with it, to be honest.
Is that maybe that they're not as experienced as you guys, that you know if the last man standing, you've got more clearing up to do?
To be fair, we've got loads of hands that help, and we all muck in, but. No, I just think they just like to take their time. You know, teenagers. Well, they're not teenagers, to be fair, but you know, young adults, they like to take their time doing everything. But luckily, they don't take their time too much time on the pitch. They're right up there and right at it.
Well, hopefully they'll be right at it at the weekend. Jamal, we could talk forever, but I better let you go because you've probably got some beauty sleep to get ahead of the weekend. Always a pleasure getting you on the Non-League Football Show. Best of luck at the weekend and speak to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. See you later.
Time then to head on over to Non-League Paper Towels. And welcome back to the Non-League Show. Executive editor at the Non-League Paper, Mr. John Couch. Welcome back, John.
Thanks, Tim. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm sort of getting into this New Year thing. I've managed to write 2023 every time I was supposed to write it so far this year. So that's good. That's a good thing. But Christmas is over. The decorations are coming down. There's lots of sorting out. Old stuff being replaced by new stuff. It seems that the managerial merry-go-round as well was started up again, with some big names in non-league departing clubs this week. Earlier today, we saw Andy Hessenthaler leaving Dover. He's returning to the pro game. From what I see, he's going to become the head of recruitment for Neil Harris's Gillingham alongside Director of Football Kenny Jackett. Now,
there's a group that are no strangers to players from the non-league game. So it's disappointing news for Dover, but I guess good news for the wider realm of non-league players that are looking for an opportunity in the pro game.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, Andy Hessenthaler is to Gillingham what Darren Ferguson is to Peterborough United, isn't he? He's I think this is what his fourth or fifth stint back there. But you know, Andy Hessenthaler is always someone who's synonymous with Gillingham, and he's been at Dover 4 years. He's overseen a very, very difficult period at the club, and he stayed so loyal. I don't think there are many people that would have blamed him if he'd have walked through those COVID times when the club decided that they couldn't fulfil their fixtures and then got relegated into the south. But still he stuck with it. But he's obviously seen an opportunity there. He's beloved. Gillingham are struggling at the bottom of League Two. They've obviously they're making one final push to ensure that they keep their Football League status, and they've obviously offered him something that he feels is too good to turn down. But I mean, I've got all the time in the world for Andy Hessenthaler. I think it shows a lot about him as a person, and you know, to stick by Dover in those tough times. A lot of people would have walked, as I said, because there was a time, wasn't there, where it wasn't a very nice. Wasn't a very nice place to be. Supporters were on their backs as well, and the crowds went. Crowds were reduced to ridiculously low levels, but he stuck with it. I think four years there, and he having a bit of a tricky time a bit on the pitch at the moment. I think sort of only one win in eight, but he's left them in a half decent state there, sort of mid table in the south, but I think he knew there was going to be a bigger project in Dover returning to the National League. Wasn't going to happen overnight. So he's obviously been lured back to Gillingham, and no doubt he'll probably end up back at Dover in a few years' time. But good luck to him. I think he's one of football's good guys. I think Andy Hessenthaler.
Yeah, I think what you said there is very true. I mean, it was very stoic, wasn't he? In whatever was thrown at him during those times at Dover, and as you say, there were some nasty things thrown at him, and a difficult thing. He was just a nice guy, wasn't he? He was professional with it, and just didn't get embroiled in silly little debates, and just got on with the job that he had in hand. And even though that job was changing. And becoming more complicated by the moment, he just did it. He just got on with it.
That's what he did. Always very, very good with the press. I remember the first time I spoke to him, I was amazed, sort of just how sort of down to earth he was, and you know, just a very, very honest guy. Got quite an unassuming also at times as well, and he just very, very good at what he did. Everything was very, very professional with him. And as I say, the job he did at Dover, I think, was unbelievable. And I think Jim Parmington's quotes, the chairman basically saying, he's still my friend, he's still welcome back to the Crabble whenever he wants. I think that speaks volumes, really. It's a sort of the relationships that he struck up around the club, and just how much the club think of him. I think he's... he's done a tremendous job, and he deserves his time back in the Football League. And I wish him every success.
Yeah, equally supportive messages I saw going around on social media being sent to Gary McCann. Him and Hampton Richmond Borough reaching a mutual decision in National South at the start of the week. Seemingly, it had good success on limited resources in National South with the club, but just couldn't take them to that next step.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that was another slightly surprising one. I mean, really, in my eyes, they weren't really on my radar as someone who may, as a club who may decide to make a change. Gary McCann's done a great job there since arriving from Hendon. I think in sort of like 3 years, but he's taken the team to the verge of the playoffs. I don't think they didn't quite get over the line, but he certainly improved them. As a team, and they've been a bit of a sticky patch at the moment, and he's decided that, or club have decided it's time to make a change, which is a little bit of a shame. But Gary McCann is someone who will always have a lot of people in the game who will have his back, and I'm sure he'll be returning into a managerial role very soon. Whereas I'm sure at the same time, Hampson will be in a decent position to offer a good manager some terms with a little bit of leeway as well, because I don't think I don't think they're going to be in any danger at the foot of the table. I think they'll be safe enough in the south, but they've got some good players down there, and it's a well run club. So I think maybe it's just a parting of ways, but I think both will be. Hopefully
we'll be
successful in the future.
Yeah. Other old friends of the show as well, also moving on to new things. It's all John Coventry departing Tilbury. Just hasn't worked out there. And at Aston United, Michael Clegg leaving after, well, I think there were two heavy Northern Premier League defeats over the Christmas period. And but I believe, you know, Cleggy being Cleggy, he's already taken on a scouting role with Altrincham. And meanwhile, his position at Aston has been filled by another old friend of the show, Steve Cunningham, most notably of Buxton fame.
Yes, that's right. I mean, there's been some big names going this week, as you say, and Steve Cunningham and Michael Clegg, and that area of the country. They're both very known, very well known guys, and both had a great deal of success in the Northern Leagues, and they're both on their way. Michael Clegg, I think it's an excellent move for him. I certainly feel he can make a difference at that. At that National League level, and Steve Cunningham, all the success he had at Buxton, now it's a good opportunity for him to get back in the dugout and see if he can help lift Aston up, as you say, after what was a little bit of a sticky Christmas New Year period, and I'm sure he'll be the man to turn things around there.
Yeah, and you just have to keep an eye on what managers wear. I don't know if I've said this before. I try and take some time every now and then just to update my mobile phone and the notes on it as to who's where. After just 3 months, Steve Kitterick has left Belper Town, but in comes Lee Attenborough, who leaves Corby Town to take up that position. It's like one of those magic puzzles you get with all the squares, the nine squares. You have to move them around and that sort of thing. Probably got to have a Christmas cracker. A chairman taking their inspiration from Christmas crackers now?
I think maybe they are. I mean, you talk about top managers in and around that northern area. Steve Kitchick's another one. Been there, done that. Unfortunately, not quite worked for him there. And he's left Belper, but it's quite amazing, really. How we were talking about the managerial merry-go-round before Christmas, and it did sort of grind to almost to a halt just before Christmas. But oh my God, it started up again, and you start the new year with a whole host of managerial changes, and must be something in the water, just sort of especially in and around that area of the country. But you're right; it's very difficult for guys like us to keep abreast of. Who's manager where? It literally changes all the time, doesn't it? But good luck to all involved. And Steve Kitchick again is another one with a very good track record, and someone who will be who I'm sure will be in a dugout very soon, and winning trophies again, no doubt.
Yeah, and I know, week in, week out, I get people that aren't able to take my call, aren't able to come on the show, or you just don't fancy being interviewed this week. And I feel for Andy Fennell, who had a torrid time as manager of Yaxley this season, and I've been keen to try and get him on. 22 games and still no win, despite a decent performance against the unbeaten Sporting United over the Christmas period. Yaxley rooted to the bottom of the table, and he leaves for personal reasons ahead of their game this week. Weekend against St Neots, who are just one place above them. Could be the glory game, but he's having to take that sidestep. But he's someone that's been up against it all season there. But for every one of these managers, even the the ones that are flying at the top of the table, even the ones that are in mid-table obscurity and they're safe there for the season, it's not a job, really, that many of us would actually want to take.
No, no, it's not one of the it's not one of the glory stations, is it? It's poor Jack Shearer had a bit of a tough season, as you say, no win in what 2021-22. It's not going particularly well for me. It would take a brave guy to go in there and turn everything around and to sort of almost rebuild the club mid season. And expect an immediate return. It's going to be a tough job for someone. Maybe it could be that a decision has been made a little bit too late there, and it could well be that he might have to think about rebuilding the level below. I know you actually have played step four football for a few years now, having come up through United Counties League, I think, and so hopefully it will work out for them. It's going to be very, very difficult to do anything this season, but I just hope that the new man comes in and he's afforded enough time really to plot the turnaround. As I say, it might not be this season, but probably more so next. But good luck to him, and I hope they're still playing at step four this time next season.
Yeah, and if it's difficult being a manager, it's also difficult being a club owner, a club chairman. In other news this week, we saw Peterborough Sports go public with their need for an investor if they're going to continue in the National North. We spoke with the gaffer there, Jimmy Dean, recently about their great start in the division, their great rise to fame and up through all the levels. But it was noticeable that even in someone as confident as him and as enthusiastic of taking the club as far as they can go, that long-term dream did seem to be a little bit tempered. Step two football is remarkably different off the field from step three football, both in terms of costs and commitments wise, from players, volunteers, everybody involved in the football club.
Yes, that's right. As you say, it's a huge step. It's very easy to look at a club like Peterborough Sports. Oh, fantastic! You know, they've got up from step three to step two. They're playing in the highest level, they've ever played at. I think they played Oldham, didn't they, in the FA Trophy very recently, which was sort of quite a historic day for them. But it's very easy to forget, just what efforts that almost comes at a cost off the field, and it's a big jump. You know, they're competing against some big clubs in that National League North. They're also doing a lot of travelling as well. You think it's Gateshead and Bride Spartans one day, and then they're right across the other side of the country to Hereford, etc. The next, it's a tough season, and it does take its toll, not only on personnel but on finances as well. And I think it's quite noticeable that the club have come out this week and said, you know, we need a little bit of help here. This is not easy. And I think that that sentiment will be mirrored by many clubs who are experiencing the same sort of predicament as them at all levels as well. You know, certainly going into step one is another big jump. But even from step five to step four, for example,
we've seen the sad news this week from the South West Peninsula League at step six, with a withdrawal and apparent folding of Godolphin Athletic. Again, same. It's the cost, it's volunteers. They're being cited as the reasons. It is tough to run a football club.
Yeah, and we've seen that a few times this season already. I think certainly step six teams, I think we've seen about three or four go this season, which is really, really worrying. Godolphin Athletic, they're the latest. Not exactly a famous non-league name, but certainly a name that I always look out for when we're doing the fixtures and results. I think it's a great name, Godolphin Athletic. But unfortunately, it's they found a level which is probably just a little bit beyond them. And again, in that southwest, we've spoken about that before, haven't we? The distances that some of these clubs have to travel in and around the sort of the southwest, with in the Peninsula League or the Western League, or even up into the into the Southern League. There's some big distances there. I think Keynsham Town was the famous one, wasn't it, when they said they couldn't fulfil their Tuesday night fixture because it was over 200 mile. You know, it's a big distances to travel, and unfortunately, it's taken the scalp of another club.
Yeah, and also, you know, for someone that does a fair bit of driving down in the southwest, and you know, Godolphin Atlantic, there, as you say, the costs are. I was just looking there at their last couple of games that were sort of playing for the Christmas period. You know, Bodmin Town, fairly local, it's probably only 50 miles, but 50 miles in Cornwall is a long part of your life, really. It's the time burdens on people, isn't it? Whether they're playing, whether they've had to take time off work, whether they're packing the kit, whether they're driving, it's things like that. And that applies to the fans as well. And if fans have got other commitments or other stresses and strains in their life, then yeah, sometimes football has to give.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, again, people often forget that. They will see the postman who's playing, or the local butcher, or something like that. But they forget that it's not just the players as well. It's the staff, the club, the management, and also the volunteers who are also working full time and trying to put a meal on the table for their family, and yet they're still going out and working voluntarily for their club and doing the vital jobs that these clubs need day in, day out. And they are often forgotten, and they're almost like unseen, unheralded heroes, really. And it happens at every single club, at every single level, from steps one right the way through. And it's tremendous, really. And it just goes to show that, you know, that the non-league family do come out and do support each other, and these clubs just could not survive without people like that. And unfortunately for Godolphin, it's just taking its toll a little bit too much. But let's just hope and pray that we don't lose many more Godolphin Atlantics, because they're the life, really, of non-league football at that level.
Yeah, indeed. And you know, the people involved at all levels, you know, one of the magical things is that ability to be part of FA national competitions, whether that's the Vase, the Trophy, or the FA Cup. And then this weekend, the big focus will be, you know, the extra sprinkling of magic in the FA Cup third round, the three non-league competitors. The third round never loses its magic, but I think this time round, a realistic chance for cup sets for all three sides representing non-league this weekend.
Yeah, very much. It's a great weekend for us, notably because all cup games are on a Saturday, which means that we can focus on all three in our paper on Saturday and give them the coverage they deserve. Three very, very different fixtures. I think Chesterfield can count themselves very unlucky not to be one of the headline games this weekend at home to West Bromwich Albion. There'll be a big crowd there on the day, and I know West Brom are going quite well in the Championship, so they're probably playing them at not the ideal time. But Chesterfield are also going well as well. This is the FA Cup; anything can happen. Paul Cook's a man who's been there, done that, and he'll be relishing the visit of West Brom, who probably won't be looking forward to going to Chesterfield very, very much. So yeah, anything's possible there. And then you've got Wrexham going to Coventry in a 5:30 kickoff. Obviously they got their S4C cameras down there as well, following them. Big support at Wrexham. Big obviously they're scalping themselves, and Coventry although going well in the Championship, probably might be might be fearing that one a little bit as well. And I think Wrexham have got every chance there. And then there's Bourne Wood, home to Accrington Stanley. Bourne Wood are our cup kings, aren't they, for the last 2 or 3 years? I mean, I watched them at Everton last season, and Accrington Stanley at home, that won't send any fears down them. In fact, if anyone has any fears, it will be Accrington themselves, because Bournemouth is not a nice place to go. But they do play very well there. They're not the biggest club in the world, but it's a tough place to go. And they've got good cup pedigree. We've seen them beat the likes of Bournemouth and AFC Wimbledon over the Bristol Rovers in the last round. What a great win that was! And they won't fear Accrington, and that'll be a real classic. In fact, of the three, I'd say Bourne would probably have a better chance of the three. I just hope it'd just be nice to get at least one of them in the fourth round, wouldn't it? Just to keep the cup magic alive.
It would indeed. And in the National League itself, Notts County have an opportunity to open up. They got a 2-point gap there at the moment. They've got a trip to Aldershot because Wrexham and Chesterfield obviously in cup action. But then you look at the midweek. Wrexham have a tough midweek at home on TV against Bromley to follow. Equally on Tuesday night, Notts at home to Boreham Woods, Chesterfield away to Wealdstone. You wouldn't want to call any of those games in the National League in those midweek fixtures. So by this time next week, who knows what the top of the National League is going to look like?
No, that's right. Over the Christmas and New Year period, we've seen a whole host of sort of surprise results, really, and results that sort of maybe bucking against the trend. So Notts County dropping 2 points at Oldham, that was a bit of a surprise. I don't know whether that says more about Oldham than it should do, but as I say, that Oldham are struggling, but you only have to look at the quality they got in that side, and I don't think Oldham are going to be in those four winning places at the end. I think Oldham could be the team really that you'll want to avoid in the second half of the season. And then you've got Wrexham at the top, who just keep going there, back to back wins, good wins against Solihull Moors, and that they've reduced the gap at the top to 2 points, so that's really hot enough in there. And look at the likes of Woking, back-to-back wins over their big rivals Aldershot, and they're still sitting in there pretty in fourth, aren't they? I don't think, you know, if they can stay there and bag a playoff place, and well, who knows what could happen there. Darren Sowles, obviously, someone who's been there, done that, and that's going to be pretty tasty to watch. But it's really hot enough, and I think there's 9 games. I think some of these clubs have got in January, haven't they? So yep, it's a big month, and I think a lot could change by the end of it. And but I can't wait to see. Can't wait to see how it pans out.
Yeah, so we've got a big weekend, you know, of a fairly packed league campaign. We've got FA Cup, we've got all those managerial moves. Anything else in particular we can expect to read about in this weekend's paper?
We've got, we're talking once again about the three up, three down debate. There's been a lot of talk. I think we touched upon it last week. There's been a lot of talk about whether that could be reignited as a gesture, almost, really, from the Football League. Matt Badcock has looked a little bit deeper into that. He's spoken to three very, very big sort of names from the past, of sort of people who have been in clubs who have finished second over the years with very big points totals, but been denied promotion. So yeah, there's a few big interviews in respect of that, and then really from then I just we're jam-packed with action the the FA Cup, you know, is it's sort of taken over us, and we'll be looking into the looking ahead to the trophy, last 32 of the trophy and the vase, and we're speaking to Horden, Horden Community Welfare, who are looking forward to their, I think their step six side, looking forward to their FA vase, and hopefully we're trying to get hold of Jersey Bulls as well, because they've got a big game against Romford in the vase, and we're also speaking to Steve Baker at Harrowborough, who have got a nice tasty FA Trophy game against FC Halifax Town to look forward to. So yeah, plenty to come this week. So if you can buy the paper, you'll be it'll be worthwhile for you.
Plenty to keep you entertained on a Sunday. Non-league paper coming out on its regular day of a Sunday this week.
That's right, yeah, on a Sunday at last.
John Couch, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks again for all your contributions, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.
Thank you very much.
That's it then for this week. Thanks as ever to all of my guests. Thank you for everybody for listening. Remember, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media and on League Show. Myself there at Tim Fuel, FULL. You can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Stay safe. Enjoy your football. Good luck if you're in FA Cup competition. Happy New Year if you've waited to hear that from the Non-League Football Show. We thank you for your continued support. Thank you and goodbye.
Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.